Hi, I'm Bill Hoehn.
And I'm Ted Hoehn.
Over the past 50 years, our family has brought many world-class dealerships to Carlsbad, including Mercedes-Benz, Porsche, Audi, Honda, Acura, Jaguar, and Land Rover.
That's right. This year we're celebrating 50 years in Carlsbad.
So on behalf of the entire Hoehn family, we want to thank San Diego. Throughout the years, we've taken tremendous pride in meeting and even exceeding our customers' automotive needs.
We value the relationships with our clients and look forward to serving you for years to come. We invite you to visit one of the Hoehn Carlsbad dealerships or hoehnmotors.com.
It's time for Midday Edition on KPBS. For today's Arts and Culture show, we're talking about Halloween, Dia de Muertos, and art to see this weekend. I'm Jade Hindman with conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and engaged. Our film critics share their favorite recommendations for Halloween movies.
It's a film that just has this like warm and staticky nostalgia that I think is perfect to kick off a fun Halloween night.
Then hear about a theater production honoring Dia de Muertos, plus your weekend preview. That's ahead on Midday Edition. First, the news. It is Halloween, and for our midday movies, we've got a few horrifying film suggestions. They are actually set on October 31st. So joining us once again are KPBS Cinema Junkie Beth Accomando and Movie Wallace's podcaster Yazdi Pathavala. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's get into it. Beth, this is your favorite holiday of the year, correct?
Yes, it is. I mean, I do celebrate Halloween 365, but I will say Halloween night is always reserved for my home haunt. And this year, we are going to be scaring the crap out of kids, hopefully, with Godzilla stomping into my backyard. Oh, I can't wait.
Okay, well, sounds like fun. But for those who may be sitting on the couch looking for a Halloween movie, perhaps, what do you recommend?
Okay, so usually I go really dark with these picks, but this year I decided to go for things that are more fun. And I was thrilled to discover a film that I had actually never seen, even though it was made about a decade ago. And the film is called WNUF Halloween Special. And it looks like a damaged VHS recording of a public access Halloween special that aired in 1987, and somebody pops it into a VCR and plays it. And here's a little bit of the trailer to set the tone.
Tonight is Halloween.
Halloween is Satan's night, the night of the devil.
Reporter Frank Stewart has a special Halloween treat in store for viewers tonight. He'll be leading a group of paranormal experts to the infamous Weber House.
Do you know what happened here in the Weber House?
Some people got killed. Their son went haywire.
Okay, the director, Chris LaMartina, says that 2 minutes into the movie, you will probably figure out it's fake because we've become a culture of non-believers. But he hopes to make people remember why they fell in love with VHS. So this is essentially a love letter to VHS and to public access TV. And it's presented like this lost videotape that someone just pops into the VCR for us to watch. And it contains a public access channel Halloween news special in which a reporter is about to investigate a haunted house. It's not really scary, but it's just so much fun, and it conjures up the spirit of Halloween night and the kind of ridiculous things that the media will do to attract viewers. And it's all wrapped up in this vintage VHS packaging. It's spot on in terms of creating the commercials and the look and sound of what a news broadcast on a public access station would be like. And it's a film that just has this like warm and staticky nostalgia that I think is perfect to kick off a fun Halloween night. And even better if you can put this in your VCR and play it and then fast forward through the commercials.
You know, I appreciate what they're doing there with that one. I really do. So, Yazdi, you've got some found footage, at least a found footage film of your own to recommend. A very different one in terms of its tone, though, but still tied to television, right?
Yes. So my recommendation is the film Late Night with the Devil from last year. which is a film about a live television broadcast in 1977 when a late-night talk show host attempted to film a live demonic possession. Of course, this is fictional, but the film cleverly uses the conceit of found footage to show what was happening that night between the film segments of that late-night talk show. The film is an atypical horror film in that it is set almost entirely within the confines of that talk show in real time, but it uses the horror elements related to the demonic possession to comment on many other things, such as the obsession we have with capturing something previously unseen on television or on social media. The talk show in question has guests who are questioning of demonic possession and eager to expose those who exploit people and their beliefs. And finally, the film also wants to comment on the price we are willing to pay, literally to the devil, to get what we want, be it fame or ego. And even when the film makes a few missteps towards the end, I think it is so much fun and also genuinely scary, easily evoking and building dread leading up to that demonic possession.
Would it be okay if we invited him on the show?
Jack, I thought I made it clear.
I think so.
No, I can't allow that. A summoning requires a carefully controlled environment. The lights, cameras, audience conditions here are hardly conducive.
The TV studio's a controlled enough environment for my money.
$500,000, to be precise.
Can we? June, please.
Okay, we need to mark our calendars because I think this is the first time Yazdi's picked a scarier film than me. This
Stranger
one's good.
Things have happened, yes.
Oh, my gosh. So I saw this movie, too, and it was fantastic. And I'm a tough critic here because I feel like so many horror movies have the same plot, and I've seen them all. There's nothing new under the sun for me when it comes to Halloween movies, but this one was really good.
It was, considering, like, it seems to have been made from, like, you know, 10 cents lying around somewhere. You know, for an independent horror movie, the script is really tight, and it kind of makes you feel like it's really found footage from the late 70s.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, for our next picks, we move away from found footage. So, Beth, what do you have next?
Okay, I'm going for fun over genuinely scary again. So my next pick is called The Midnight Hour. And this is a film you could start watching around 10:30, and then you could have it end at midnight right along with the characters in the movie. So this, too, is an older film. It was made in 1985, and it was made for television, so you know it's not going to be too scary or gory. But again, I'm looking for films that have the spirit of Halloween running through their veins. And this one is set on Halloween night. Of course, you've got some teenagers who decide to do something stupid, and they steal vintage costumes from a local museum and open a book. Actually, it might be a scroll. And as they always do in movies, they read things they shouldn't.
Astrachios Mundabor Desmagon. I invoke your powers. Come heed my bidding on this night of nights, the eve of Samhain, All Hallows' Eve. Spirits of darkness, I command you to rise from your graves. Et lavabis sagame. All manner of demons, I implore your release from eternal torment. Castigus sagame. All manner of dead, renewed by sleep, thirsting for blood. This night and forever, he who is touched by evil shall become evil. Sodomus Sagame.
And yes, they bring back the dead, and they have to perform a ritual by midnight on Halloween, or else everyone will stay as evil monsters. It has a young LeVar Burton and Sherry Belafonte doing a song and a ridiculous dance called Get Dead. Obviously, it was hoping to be some kind of a Michael Jackson thriller video.
Everybody should try it. Get dead.
Like WNUF Halloween special, it's really fun and it's very Halloween themed. And it doesn't often get mentioned in these kind of lists. It also has Wolfman Jack coming over the radio airwaves, appropriately introducing songs fit for a Halloween night.
All right, Yazzie, your next pick has a similar Halloween setting, but is really about something else entirely.
Yes, so this is not a horror film by any standards, more of an existential dread sort of film. This is the film Donnie Darko, which came out in late 2001. It was the first film from writer-director Richard Kelly, and it's about a teenage boy, played by a very young Jake Gyllenhaal, who is convinced that the world is going to come to an end on Halloween Day. And he's also being guided to commit crimes by an imaginary friend that only he can see as a person wearing a sinister bunny face mask. One of the other things the movie takes on is this healthy disregard for authority and challenging those who are trying to force their opinions on others. And here is a scene from the movie of Donnie Darko speaking out against one such authority figure played by no other than Patrick Swayze.
What is your name, son?
Gerald.
Well, Gerald, I think you're afraid.
Are you telling us this stuff so we can buy your book? Because I gotta tell you, if you are, that was some of the worst advice I ever heard.
You see how sad this is?
I want your sister to lose weight, tell her to get off the couch, stop eating Twinkies, and maybe go out for field hockey. You know what? No one ever knows what they want to be when they grow up. You know, it takes a little while to find that out, right, Jim? And you. Yeah, you. You're sick of some jerk shoving your head down the toilet, but you know what? Maybe you should lift some weights or take a karate lesson, and the next time he tries to do it, you kick him in the balls.
The movie came out, as I mentioned, late in 2001 and made only about $500,000 in the box office. Since its release and, you know, abysmal performance at the box office, the movie has gained kind of a cult following. And at this point, I wonder if more has been written about any other film in the history of cinema than Donnie Darko. You know, I watched this movie again last night, and I love that it still remains like an enigmatic puzzle. Mm-hmm. And almost like 20-some years later, people are still arguing about what it means and how its themes of time travel and mental health and bullying and teenage angst, how they all fit together with this plot, which is, you know, reasonably convoluted. And there are about 100 theories, but no consensus. And I love the fact that anybody who is watching it for the first time can join the discourse and bring their own ideas to the table on exactly what happened. It's not a happy movie, but it's a movie, you know, which really asks a lot of questions. And I like that.
I love that horror movies come with a message. Okay, for our final picks, you both go to a director who is often associated with Halloween, and that is Tim Burton. Beth, which Burton film have you chosen?
Well, since I've been partaking in the library spooky email book club in which we're reading Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, I decided to go with Tim Burton's riff on that classic story, and this is Frankenweenie. So this is one of my favorite Burton films, and it's really sweet, and it pays loving homage to the horror genre. So that's what I love most about it. So in addition to the obvious reference to Frankenstein, there are references to Vincent Price, Peter Lorre, Ray Harryhausen, the stop-motion animation guy, The Bride of Frankenstein, and all the movies that he probably grew up loving and that we all feel a connection to. So it's got absolutely stunning and delightful black and white stop-motion animation, and it's the story of a young boy whose beloved dog dies and he reanimates him.
I can fix that.
Okay, it's not technically set on Halloween night. It's set on what they call Dutch Day, and I looked that up, and apparently that is October 22nd, so it's fairly close. But it is just a Valentine to the things I love about the horror genre, and it's about a young boy's love for his dog, and it's that love as well as the lightning that brings the pup back. So I know this is not what I usually recommend, but I just thought I would, like, switch it up a little bit.
All right, I'll allow it.
Thank you.
Yazdi, what's your final Halloween night film recommendation?
Before my final Halloween night recommendation, I completely check Bette's pick for Frankenweenie. I adore that film. Little Boy and His Dog. What's not to love? Everybody should watch it. My pick is another gorgeously rendered stop-motion animation movie from this director, Tim Burton, and that movie is Nightmare Before Christmas. I won't lie, that is my go-to film for Halloween. I watch it, you know, almost every year. And the movie is about Jack Skellington, the pumpkin king of Halloween Town, who spends all of his time trying to devise ways to scare the town people until one day he stumbles upon Christmas Town and hatches this big plot to kidnap Santa Claus, and all kinds of craziness ensues.
Something is missing. But what? I've got the beard, the coat, the boots, the
Jack,
belt.
Jack! This time we bagged him.
This time we really did.
He sure is big, Jack.
And heavy!
Let me out!
Sandy Claus, in person. What a pleasure to meet you. What? Why, you have hands. You don't have claws at all.
I love this movie. There is not a shred of sentimentality in it. It's pretty dark. The visuals are wonderful. And I just found out recently that the female lead of Sally is voiced by Catherine O'Hara, who's been a mainstay in a lot of Tim Burton's movies. Tim Burton of late has become kind of a gun for hire for big studio movies, and he's been making these very artful movies, which unfortunately have been lacking heart. And I would really love for him to go back to, you know, his roots and do something like The Nightmare Before Christmas again. I certainly would welcome it.
And this is another film that Tim Burton, he wrote and produced this, and he wrote the book that it was based on. And I just want to remind people that the film was actually directed by Henry Selick, but it definitely has Tim Burton's stamp on it in terms of the visual style and the look of the animation.
Well, I want to thank you both for providing us with a full night and maybe day of Halloween set movies to watch. I've been speaking with KPBS cinema junkie Beth Accomando and Movie Wallace's podcaster Yazdi Pathavala. Beth and Yazdi, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we want to go out with some appropriate music. The song is This Is Halloween from The Nightmare Before Christmas.
This is Halloween. Everybody make a scene. Trick or treat.
Tell your neighbors, gonna die of fright.
It's our town.
Everybody's free.
Coming up, the community reflects on Dia de Muertos through a new theater production.
Just the thought that they come back and say hi for a day, just to be able to see how we live life.
Hear more when Midday Edition returns.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Bilhau Plumbing, Heating and Air Restoration and Flood Services. Family-owned and operated for three generations, Bilhau has been serving the plumbing, heating and air, and water damage needs of the San Diego area since 1980. With their fleet of trained professionals, Bilhau has the ability to service all major and minor plumbing and HVAC emergency needs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Bilhau is committed to providing excellent service to their customers with transparent quotes and attention to detail on every job. Whether you're in need of an HVAC installation, plumbing, or water damage restoration in San Diego, they offer the convenience of scheduling an appointment over the phone, online, or through live chat on their website. Call 1-800-BILHOW or visit bilhau.com. Because we know how.
Welcome back to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. Tomorrow marks Dia de Muertos, or Day of the Dead, the Mexican holiday and tradition celebrated widely in San Diego, honors death, life, and memories of the departed. Spirits of loved ones are also thought to visit their relatives. So this weekend, the Old Globe is partnering with community members and artists to perform a play commemorating the holiday. The central story is inspired by participants and the memories of their loved ones. Joining me now is Valeria Vega. She is the Family and Cross-Cultural Program Manager at the Old Globe. Valeria, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me. It's a pleasure to talk with you all, as always.
So this particular play is part of the Old Globe's collab program, and it involves community members. So what do people get a chance to do?
Well, people get to connect with the Old Globe primarily and pretty much participate in the art of making theater in various forms. We teamed up this year with Casa Familiar, and Casa Familiar reached out to their community and invited participants to join the workshop that started in August. The first process in the first level is conversations where we invite, and in this case, we commission a playwright, a well-known playwright in the community. And in this case, I invited Crystal Mercado to be part of these conversations with the participants. We got 12 people signed in for this program. We met every Thursday, 2 hours in Casa Familiar, talking about what Dia de los Muertos is for them. What do our traditions mean for them now that most all of them are based in San Diego and based in the United States? And with that information and with certain like little creative exercises where they got to write and got to talk about and write poetry and write monologues, Crystal Mercado left for 2 weeks. And in that process, she developed this play, Y Seguimos Juntos, or Still Together, that we brought back to the second level of our workshop. And then I was the one that directed the process with the participants.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to ask you about the play itself. Tell me what it's called and walk me through the central storyline.
Of course, it's called Still Together, O Seguimos Juntos. And the playwright Crystal Mercado had a wonderful idea of bringing objects to life that told the stories of the ones that have passed, objects that in life belong to them. And now they were going to tell their story with their perspective, and they were going to share what they lived with the ones that had passed. So with writing exercises, very creative writing exercises like poems and Mad Libs, and then asking them to actually write a monologue that was based on this object talking about them. They all of them develop a monologue that Crystal curated, and the 7 participants teamed up together and kind of figured out how we wanted to tell the story and how we wanted these objects to come to life and tell the story. So we have a football jersey talking about Max and how he lived with Max and how they played together the game and how they went and had dinner with the family and then how he got washed and was always constantly being hugged by the mother that told the story. Then we have the game of Pokino, talking about how the grandma used to choose the pennies and used to grab pennies of others to be able to win the game, and watching telenovelas with the grandmother all the time. So it's these beautiful objects that are telling the stories of the one that passed with the voice of the ones that remember them and wanted to honor them.
Hmm. Well, we actually have a clip from that scene you mentioned of the football jersey. Mm-hmm. Let's take a listen.
Ya al acabar el día, llegábamos a casa, donde mamá nos recibía con un caluroso y grande abrazo.
So describe the scene for me.
Of course, it's the jersey saying that when they finished the day, when they got back home, and mom always used to greet them with a big, warm, loving hug. That's Flor. Flor is the name of the participants that we just listened to her voice and her story.
Hmm. And that clip was from your performance this past weekend at the Old mm-hmm. Globe. In talking to all of the participants, were there any stories or memories that stood out most to you?
All of them definitely had their essence. All of them had a beauty and a remembrance of the person that is witnessing their loved ones talk about them. Definitely this one, the one that we saw. I believe that one of the most difficult things as human beings that we encounter is mothers or fathers losing their children, right? That is not part of what we normally are accustomed to or what we normally grow up thinking that one day that's going to happen. We are able to say goodbye to our elders in a way, in a slow process. And some of them we say goodbye and we know we're going to say goodbye to them eventually. But in this case, Flor talking about her son in this way and wanting to be so brave and sharing this story out loud. And of course, it was an emotional moment. In rehearsal, we went through the scenes and we told the story and we were there and encouraged all of us together. But definitely this weekend, with the first performances that they had, it was a very emotional piece because she finally told the story with an audience and assimilated what the story was about and the moment that she was sharing with all. So definitely Flor made a beautiful moment, but all of them have the essence. Also, Diane spoke about her resemblance with her grandma. So in one moment when she's talking about that and how the grandma used to say, "You look like me, and you even have my hair, you have the color of my skin," that was also a beautiful moment to witness.
Well, what will happen with the play after the performances this weekend? I mean, does the Globe archive the play in their library?
We do. We do definitely keep a copy of the script, and we do document the whole process, and everything is in the archives and in the file. But also, this year, I got to work, aside from Casa Familiar, we've been working in the past years always with City Heights and their festival of Dia de los Muertos. But this year I didn't, because we work with Casa Familiar, I didn't want to lose that connection and also lose that opportunity to perform in City Heights. So Friday, November 1st, we're going to be in Casa Familiar with their celebration in the evening time. And on Saturday, November 2nd, we are going to go to City Heights and perform it there as well with their community. So in one way or another, it's still going to be living in our memories and in our hearts as well.
Well, what's the significance of performing in San Ysidro and City Heights?
It's our community. It's our people. It's nuestra gente. Nuestra gente is there more vivid and more alive. It's cities and it's communities that you listen to the language. You hear people hablando español and being, of course, San Ysidro so close, a second away from Tijuana and City Heights being so diverse, and it's communities that constantly remind us of where we live and geographically where San Diego is in the world, so close to Mexico.
And Valeria, what about you? What does Dia de Muertos mean to you? What's your favorite part of the holiday?
Oh, my favorite. It's just the thought that they come back and say hi for a day. Just to be able to see how we live life and sometimes how we live life and honor them. That also is a big thing. Some of the moments where we unite and cook their favorite dishes and remember the love and remember the moments. We light candles to guide them. We put flores de cempasúchil so they can smell them and they can follow the path. Just the whole thing of thinking that they're going to be here for a day with us. That's my favorite part.
That's beautiful. There's so many ways to honor the holiday. What role do you see theater playing in that?
Remembering their stories by telling them and making theater with them and sharing them with audiences. And also at the Globe, we have various different audiences and communities that they actually go in there without knowing a lot of the information that we share or encounter a lot of the traditions that they probably have heard about, maybe in a very light way. But when they get to experience it and see it, we are connecting in various levels, and we're also connecting in customs and in rituals, and in we're sharing culture even if it's not ours necessarily.
I've been speaking with Valeria Vega. She is the Family and Cross-Cultural Program Manager for the Old Globe. Valeria, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
The Old Globe's Dia de Muertos play will be shown at Casa Familiar in San Ysidro on Friday and again on Saturday at the Annex Performance Center in City Heights. Entry is free and open to all ages. For more information and stories about Dia de Muertos, you can head to kpbs.org. Coming up, your weekend preview and a new exhibit from border artist Alvaro Alvarez.
I am from San Diego, from Baja, from the border, so these are buildings that I feel attached to, as it is.
KPBS Midday Edition returns after the break.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ladan Akbarnia, curator of South Asian and Islamic art at the San Diego Museum of Art, where we are showcasing a new exhibition exploring Islamic art, science, and culture through the lens of wonder. Wonders of Creation, Art, Science, and Innovation in the Islamic World presents more than 200 works spanning 13 centuries across two galleries, inviting visitors to discover marvels of the universe through intersections of art and science and humanities, customs, and crafts. See medieval tools and treasures, ornate jewelry, lavishly illustrated manuscripts, and large-scale works of contemporary art. Get tickets at sdmart.org.
You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. Border artist Alvaro Alvarez reimagined 46 high-rise projects abandoned along a 90-mile stretch of the Baja coastline after the 2008 financial crisis. His art evokes memory, loss, and renewal. The exhibit will be featured as a Dia de Muertos ofrenda in San Ysidro this Saturday. KPBS Arts reporter Julia Dixon Evans recently visited Alvarez in his studio to discuss the buildings, the art, and why he's anchoring this project with Dia de Muertos. Here's their conversation.
Okay, can you start by describing the buildings that inspired this project? What is this network of abandoned buildings?
Yeah, so the 46 buildings that are distributed along the coast of Baja California, they stretch from the border in Tijuana all the way down to Ensenada. So it's over 90 miles. And it's just skyscrapers on the beach. Originally, they were getting built in 2008 in what was to be the state's largest development ever. $3 billion in sales, 12,500 homes, 65,000 jobs. And it all became halted because of the financial crash. So for 15 years, they've been sitting on the beach as concrete and steel skeletons. It's beautifully eerie, but it's been over a decade and a half of this construction purgatory, if you will.
And how significant was this promise? Like, what do you know about the housing landscape up until that point along the Baja coastline?
Yeah, it was supposed to be the next big coast, sort of what we see in Riviera Maya. And why? Well, because it's right next to California. Most of the investors were American buyers. Many of them were looking to retire. The promise of these 46 buildings was high-end, fun amenities, living on the coast at an affordable price, all within driving distance from San Diego, from LA, and giving that retirement or sort of second home, that was really the model for the housing.
Okay, so what made you want to capture these buildings and this pause in art?
Well, when I was, you know, working as an architect after college, I had already researched this. This was already so, you know, ingrained in my mind. So part of my own architectural identity, if you will, because I am from here. I am from San Diego, from Baja, from the border. So these are buildings that I feel attached to, as it is, especially because I was studying and working in architecture away from here. Unfortunately, there wasn't anything I could do being far away. My grandfather, on the other hand, I witnessed him keep at it for 10 years. Ever since I did that original research as an intern, he then took that and nonstop just went with the bankers, new developers, the city officials, get the conversation going again for it to become the goal to bring them back to life. And I saw this going on, and what usually happens, it's like, why bother with that? It's like, they've just always been like that, and they're always going to be like that. Now, as an artist, with this new language in which I take on architecture to tell stories, I wanted to create a cultural registry of this revival, of this rebirth that is going on in our coast. Hence the name, 46 Renacimientos, translates to a sort of renaissance or coming back to life again. Mm. I found it to be very important because, you know, for years, you know, not just architecturally, but the reality is stories coming out of our corner of the world tend to be negative, whether it be crime or prices or homelessness. So now we have a good story. Now we have a story about resilience coming back to life. And I think it's just as important to highlight it and celebrate it so that the buildings are not just monuments to abandonment, but if they do come back to life, that they show our own resiliency, you know, as a community, as a cross-border community.
I love that. You talk about how these buildings have souls. Can you talk about how you're anchoring this exhibit with a Dia de Muertos event?
For me, Day of the Dead was very important because it sort of put on this project, these 46 buildings, on the same plane as something as heavy as loss. As much as we discuss this as a rebirth, as a celebration, a lot of people suffer financial loss on this, and it's a difficult part of our history. But the point is to accept it as a starting point, just as we accept someone's passing, right? If we normalize abandoned buildings, then how can we move on, right? We have to accept it as something difficult that happened to our history, but also take pride in that we get a chance to come back from it ourselves. You know, this is a regional effort. This is a community effort, you know, local builders and developers and organizations and governments wanting this to happen, right? So for me, Day of the Dead becomes the perfect stage to share it with.
So these buildings are getting a new life. They are going to be finished and
yes,
turned into housing or what have you.
Yeah.
What does it mean that you are immortalizing and pausing us in this space?
Ah, that's very special. Thanks for asking. Because that's precisely what I wanted, that the occasion gets marked in which we came back from life. It sounds dramatic, but fortunately, it's happening, you know? Maybe this rebirth was gonna happen even without these paintings and these sculptures. But to me, it's very special, and I feel very fortunate and blessed that I get a chance to be a part of this moment in history, in this registry. I think that when we create this sort of cultural documentation, if you will, of what happens around us, our built environments, especially, you know, speaking as an architect too, it enriches us. It enriches us as a community. We're celebrating World Design Capital this whole year, and this is an endorsed project by them. So it empowers our growth, our resiliency too, and our identity. And it lets us grow from perhaps difficult parts of our past, but we can still have hope for life.
What is it that you want visitors to the exhibit to take away from it?
The point of this exhibition, and it's a one-day event, so it's quite ephemeral, just like, you know, death perhaps, or life, in fact, to accept it. I'm doing this show for the buildings. I love to share it. I love it when people become interested, whether it be in the real estate angle of it, in the cross-border side of it, in the sustainability of the materials or spirituality. But for me, I wanted to show these buildings some respect, for them to finally have a moment to breathe and to rest, which is really what this is for their souls to rest. I would do this show even if, you know, no one would show up. Because I know there would be at least 46 spirits, right? When people join us on Saturday, November 2nd, they're gonna be a part of this moment too. And they're gonna take it with them as a memory. And next time they see an abandoned building, they too can wonder if it should be accepted or if new life can also come from it.
That was architectural artist Alvaro Alvarez speaking with KPBS arts reporter Julia Dixon-Evans, who joins me now. Julia, welcome.
Hey, Jade. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here as always. So that sounds fascinating. Tell us more about what these artworks look like.
So first of all, they're all in grayscale. So he works in black and white, but it's really hard to kind of understate how much color he still has in there. It's just a lot of different shades, and the way that he works with texture and shadows just really makes them feel rich despite being grayscale. So he starts with like a reclaimed wooden panel that serves as his canvas, and then he builds up what Alvaro describes as the topography of the building on the panel. So he uses like, he'll bolt things into place or attach foam, and then he will layer on top of that the tissue, paper mache. He'll add black gesso and paint, and then he turns these into renderings kind of the buildings. Some of them are like abstract architectural models, and others are more in relief. Some of them are kind of conceptual. There's one with just a bunch of posts sticking up. Others are like a bird's eye view. Some even have the ocean in there. And the grayscale adds this layer of eeriness to it all.
And what will this ofrenda look like?
Okay, so he's setting them up on display like an altar on a table with all of the art pieces set out on the tabletop. They're not hanging on a wall. And so that also sort of makes them feel more like architectural models. And there's 46 of these big panels. And he'll be peppering amongst them photographs of the building, marigolds, sugar skull style art. And yeah, the whole thing is free. There's going to be music and food and drink there as well to celebrate.
All right. And you can check out Alvarez's exhibit at Black Box Gallery in San Ysidro from noon to 5 on Saturday. Let's take a look at a few other art events this weekend. San Diego Opera kicks off their 60th season. Is that right?
Right. And they're performing La Boheme, which is one of their most beloved operas. It's actually the first one they ever produced, and also the first one that they performed in 2015 after the Save the San Diego Opera campaign when they kicked off their 50th season. So this is by Puccini. It's considered one of his masterpieces and one of the most popular operas ever. It's a story about some Parisian artists who are struggling to survive. They're navigating money, friendship, illness, love. And, you know, both Rent and Moulin Rouge are considered adaptations of La Boheme. And yeah, they're going to project English and Spanish language translations above the stage so that you can follow along. And it'll be at the Civic Theater. Shows are 7:30 Friday and Saturday nights and 2 p.m. on Sunday.
Oh, well, there's also some contemporary dance to check out. What can you tell us about the production Malashak Dance is putting on this weekend?
Yeah, this is called Cultivate, and it's a series of four works of contemporary dance. Three of them are by their relatively new artistic director. His name is Christopher K. Morgan. One of them's a world premiere. It's called The Dulling Effect, and it's based on the study from 1934, so 90 years ago, that observed the impact of technology on our mental capacity. So back then, the technology was the radio. And of course, our technology-based dulling effect has definitely snowballed from there. There's another piece in the show that Christopher K. Morgan collaborated on with founding director John Malashak. This was actually a commission from the San Diego Museum of Art, and it's inspired by abstract expressionist painter Arshile Gorky. And performances are at the Seville Theater at City College. It's Saturday night at 7:30 and 4 p.m. on Sunday.
Sounds very interesting. And there's a family-friendly San Diego Symphony concert this weekend inspired by children's literature. It's called Because, a Symphony of Serendipity. And it's actually based on the book by Mo Wellems and Amber Wren.
Yeah, this is basically going to feel like a symphonic version of the book. It's narrated. They're going to have projections of the illustrations. And the music was written for the book. It's all about how a little girl becomes a conductor. And the book's written by Mo Willems. He's famous for Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus. My kid's favorite was Knuffle Bunny or Knuffle Bunny. And the illustrations are by Amber Wren. The compositions by Jessie Montgomery. She is a Grammy winner and just this really prolific and interesting contemporary composer. And to round out the show, they're going to be performing a couple more pieces from Latin American composers like Gabriela Ortiz or some Latin American dance pieces by composer Aaron Copland. And this is an 11 a.m. concert. Love that for families. So, yeah, it's designed for kids aged 6 to 12, but people of all ages are welcome. And kids under 3 even are free as long as they don't need their own seat. And tickets are $29 and up.
All right. Well, before we go, where can people find live music this weekend?
So tonight, if you don't have any Halloween plans or if you're looking for something to do after trick-or-treating, Fresh Veggies Microbrass is playing two free shows at Lulu's Jungle Room. And they're this local jazz alternative brass band. They have super high energy performances. We're listening to their single Saboteur.
You never heard of me. I am your saboteur.
Both shows tonight are 21 and up. One is at 7 and one is at 9. There's no reservation required, but seating is first come, first serve. But I imagine people will probably be on their feet for this one. And then on Saturday, Venezuelan guitarist Felix Martin and his trio will play at Brick by Brick. They're kind of an eclectic metal sound with a little bit of Latin fusion in there. And they're playing with this band from Orange County called Stereosity. It's kind of a math rock band. And this is their latest release called Sprout. And then on Sunday, 80s and 90s punk and noise band Steel Pole Bathtub, they're playing at the Casbah with Owl Be Damned and Wife. And Steel Pole Bathtub just put out a new single this month. It's called Seen, Not Heard.
All right. Well, you can find details or sign up for Julia's weekly arts newsletter at kpbs.org/arts. I've been speaking with KPBS arts reporter Julia Dixon Evans. Julia, thanks.
Thank you, Jade, and happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers. Experience the new 2024 Tacoma at your local dealer and learn about the new lineup, including turbocharged four-cylinder engines and a hybrid powertrain option. San Diego County Toyota Dealers. We make it easy.